Look, I understand that the weather is slowly beginning to turn for the better and that you want to go outside and enjoy yourself following the hour advancement of the clock and leading to longer daylight outside. On top of the fact that the frenzy that is NFL free agency might have the majority of your attention, and that's cool. However, we're here to remind you that the game of basketball never stops too. It's the games and stories that come to encompass the game that we love and know as the NBA only continues to come more and more by the hour in this constant news cycle we reside in as the world continues to turn. What's up, everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of the New 24 podcast. This is episode number 18 for all of those that's been keeping score of the game from the opening tip until the final buzzer and listening in to us throughout their day-to-day excursions and hustles. We truly appreciate you all for taking the time out of your beautiful day to lock in with us. And make sure that you're staying afloat on all of the most recent happenings to take shape over the last several days in the NBA. For those who are new, I'm your host, Gabriel Wilkins. And as always, I'm joined beside my good friend, running mate on the floor, and co-host, and Torrence Stagger, to talk on all things pertaining to the game. How you doing, my man?
I'm doing great. Yeah, episode number 18. 18 used to be worn by Phil Jackson on the Knicks and former Finals MVP, former MVP, I'm sorry, Dave Cowens.
It did.
Yeah, shout out to the 70s, man.
Yeah, former Chicago Sky head coach, Dave Cowens. But on a previous installment of the New 24 podcast, me and Torrence sought to converse over several players in the midst of career years as we highlighted the recent play of Detroit Pistons guard, Cade Cunningham, and discuss whether or not the number one overall pick from the 2021 NBA draft out of Oklahoma State has made a legitimate case to garner consideration for a spot on the All-NBA first team at season's end after starring in his first All-Star game almost a month ago, while also discussing what makes the NBA's current scoring leader in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander one of the toughest one-on-one covers in the game today out in Oklahoma City, before taking time to talk about a man who continues to post triple-double stat lines in Nikola Jokic and ponder over if fans have become numb to the Joker's nightly exploits out in Denver prior to assessing LeBron James's 22nd season in the NBA as a member of the Los Angeles Lakers. Now, we'll seek to discuss a franchise out in the Eastern Conference that's currently in the midst of a 14-game winning streak, marking the third time they've had a win streak of 10 games or more this season, while also discussing a team they'll see over the weekend in front of a national audience that has recently fallen in the standings after getting off to a superb start, in addition to a multi-time MVP winner who recently became the sixth youngest player in league history to reach 20,000 points in his career this past week. However, before we get into the following topics on the docket this week, let's take a moment, as we always do, to tip our cap to the top performers around the league over the last week in our opening tip-off segment, beginning with a player you heard us talking about last week in episode 17, and that's Nikola Jokic of the Denver Nuggets, who recorded the first ever 30-point, 20-rebound, and 20-assist outing in NBA history, going off for 31 points, all the while dishing out 22 dimes and hauling down 21 boards to help his team capture a majestic overtime win at home against the Phoenix Suns in front of a national audience during the weekend on ESPN, in addition to a pair of teammates who you can catch live in action on Wednesday night across the same network that Jokic posted his triple-double in Derrick Wright and Peyton Pritchard of the Celtics. The duo joined forces to knock down the most three-point shots combined in a single game between a pair of teammates. It's Pritchard's 10 trays on the way to a career-high 43 points in the outing, beside 9 triples from White, proved to be just enough offense to help Boston earn a 10-point win against the Portland Trailblazers, all the while making more surprising history along the way as White went on to score a career-high 41 points, making the two guys the first pair of teammates in Celtics history to score 40 points or more in the same game. And last but not least, a future Hall of Famer who, when it's all said and done, will likely be regarded by many as the greatest shooter of all time, and Stephen Curry of the Golden State Warriors, as the newly minted member of the 25,000-point club, became just the 10th man in NBA history to reach the mark with one team last weekend in front of Dubs faithful by the Bay against the Detroit Pistons. Torrance, we also witnessed Pelicans forward Zion Williamson explode for 37 points and 6 assists while shooting 74% from the floor without committing a single turnover in just 26 minutes of playing time against the Lakers out in LA this past week. On top of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum combining for 71 points and 18 rebounds in front of a national audience out in Beantown to help the Celtics prevail against the Lakers and snap their 8-game winning streak to close out their week in grand fashion. Not to mention James Harden going off for 50 points for the first time since 2019 in a Clippers win over the Detroit Pistons in the Intuit Dome, and the two MVP candidates in Jokic and SGA showing out back-to-back days in OKC. When you look back on the week that was, who are some of the top players, coaches, as well as storylines that have managed to stand out to you since we last linked up to record an episode?
People are going to say the target is on our back, but I hope it's right on our forehead in between our eyes. I hope I can see the red dot. That's a quote from Joe Mazzulla, and that's who I want to start with this week. Hey man, this is a guy who, of course, took over for Ime Udoka at the beginning of the 22-23 season. And he had his ups and downs, a lot of criticism. You got well-known Boston Celtic fans like Bill Simmons referring to him as second row Joe. You know, a lot of criticism. He led this team to a championship, looking at the second seed this season. Hey, he's a guy with many great quotes, too. Entertaining interview at times, if you can catch on to the deadpan humor. But he's definitely serious about his job. Coaches don't get the credit that they deserve, but a coach can be the difference between a win and a loss. It can be a difference between a first-round exit and the NBA championship. And this somebody like I expect to see in the league a very long time. Just wanted to give him a shout-out. Chet Holmgren. The Thunder 16-4 with him this season. To me, SGA, MVP candidate, but today and going forward, this is the most important player on the team. He's the big difference maker. He has to be consistent in order for them to win the championship this season. As example, Sunday, highest plus minus on the floor if you're somebody who sees value in that stat. Monday night in the loss, he's the guy with the lowest. Chet, he's battled injuries. OKC went to get Hardenstein this summer to help take some of that load off of him. Chet can play the four now, which makes their team even more devastating. When you got somebody who's a great shot blocker like that and can now play more weak side defense while somebody else bangs in the paint. Can he remain healthy? Can he be consistent in his play? We'll see going forward. And last but not least, we're going to like take it back to the crib, Josh Giddey. He's been averaging 23 points, 11 rebounds, 8 assists, and a steal and a block since the All-Star game. The Bulls on a 3-game winning streak, and he just suffered an ankle injury Monday. He's up for an extension this offseason. I'm curious as to what that number may be, but I would like to see him remain on the Bulls at this point. I'm somebody who liked the trade for Giddey for Alex Caruso, because I just thought it was just a big talent upgrade. And if you even look at it statistically, it was a big upgrade in that area as well. We know Caruso is always a fan favorite everywhere he seems to go. But just for the talent standpoint, I thought it was a great move. You got him and Lonzo, two great playmakers. I know it's always build and destroy with the Bulls, or it's the criticism of they just like to be mediocre in the middle. I've changed my opinion 1,000 times about it. But Giddey, he's somewhere in that gray area as well. He's a young player, but he's been around. He's a great talent, but you don't want to overinvest. He's somebody that struggles with his shot from the outside. But he can score, and he, like I said, he playmakes for others. Shout out to him. We'll see what goes on in the future.
You bring up Josh Giddey of the Chicago Bulls. He just recently constructed a triple-double outing for the Bulls in a road win against the Miami Heat over this past weekend as the Aussie guard finished with 26 points while shooting 60% from the floor to go beside 12 dimes and securing 10 rebounds, all the while hitting the triple that proved to be the dagger late in regulation to help Chicago seal the deal. Followed that game up with yet another grand shooting performance to open up the week at home against the Indiana Pacers. scoring 21 points on an 8-for-10 shooting clip from the floor in the opening half of play on the way to a double-double, in which he finished the evening with 29 points and 10 rebounds in a contest that resulted in yet another victory for the Bulls. Like you said, Torrence, he left the contest after spraining his right ankle midway through the fourth quarter in that outing. But since the Zach LaVine trade went down, Giddey is really taking his game to another level after being granted the keys to go about initiating Billy Donovan's offense. Giddey's been playing with a lot of confidence over the last 15 to 20 games as well. And I truly believe if the Bulls had won some games over the course of this stretch he's been on the way that they have as of late, he likely could have been in play for receiving player of the week honors out in the Eastern Conference. That's how solid he's been since the All-Star break. In the 9 games that Giddey has played following the All-Star break, you heard Torrence mention his numbers. He's averaging 23.1 points to go beside 11 boards and 8.4 dimes per game. And for those that always talk about his shooting from beyond the arc, well, he's improved that. He's shooting almost 53% from long range, and he's shooting over 50% from the floor. And he's doing an excellent job of getting downhill, attacking defenders off the dribble, and feeding the personnel around him. Hell, Zach Collins, over his last 10 games, has been averaging almost 13 points beside 9 rebounds on 56% shooting from the field, and making the most out of his playing time that he received prior to the return of Nikola Vucevic earlier this week from injury, doing the majority of his damage beside Josh Giddey, as they've proven that they can work well beside one another when on the floor together, and the numbers show it. Since February 11, the duo has played 182 minutes on the court together, and the Bulls have boasted an offensive rating of 124.2, with a defensive rating of 106.2 in the 10 games both have played beside each other. It's among the best of any pairing on the team that has played at least 135 minutes or more together this season, as only the Giddey and Kevin Huerter pairing rates higher within that time span. You combine that with the recent play of Kobe White as of late, who has scored at least 20 points or more in 6 straight outings and finding ways to still do some damage in spite of his struggles from downtown, you can understand why the Bulls boast the 6th highest net rating in the NBA over the course of their current win streak, as they managed to win 3 consecutive games for the first time since mid-December, in large part due to the play of Giddey and his castmates. And I'm very curious and eager to see what his market will look like in free agency, as he'll be a restricted free agent this summer. I don't see too many teams outside of maybe the Brooklyn Nets making a play for him, but I truly believe if you're the Chicago Bulls and you're Arturis Karnasovas and Mark Eversley, you got to do everything in your power to try and keep him here at a reasonable price tag and cost. Because if you don't know which direction you're going in, why not have a guy that's a capable playmaker that's able to make guys around him better? Do I think Josh Giddey is the guy that you build your team around? No, I don't. Do I think he's the second coming of Magic Johnson? Absolutely not. But I do believe he's a guy that can serve as a playmaker and a shot creator within your offense and make the guys around him better. Hopefully they keep him around and add some young talent beside him and see where they can take this thing as they seek to ascend upward in the Eastern Conference and move away from that play-in range at some point in time. And how about Aaron Wiggins of the Oklahoma City Thunder, a player I've been meaning to shout out in the opening tip segment for quite some time? You know, for a player who comes off the bench in OKC, Wiggins has found a way to rise up and not only just be a serviceable contributor to the second unit, but a quality three-point marksman who has played so well this year to where you would think if he was provided with more minutes, he could easily be the Thunder's second option. And that's no slight to Jalen Williams. But over Wiggins' last 10 games, he's averaging 15.4 points per game while shooting almost 51% from the floor and 44% from downtown. You know, Torrence, once we get into the playoffs, there's going to be some games where your second or even third option might not have it on a given night. And you may have to rely on a guy coming off the bench to really provide your unit with some spark to either climb back in a game or help you secure a victory late. Wiggins has been one of those guys for the Thunder this year many a time. We saw him pouring in 41 points to go beside 14 rebounds and a win against the Kings last month when Jalen Williams was out due to a right wrist sprain injury. In addition to also dropping 30 points against the Portland Trail Blazers over the weekend in a game where OKC head coach Mark Daigneault decided to hold SGA out for rest prior to the back-to-back showdowns against the Denver Nuggets. Wiggins has really emerged as a quality off-ball threat in the league. He can make plays on the ball and is one of the best cutters you'll find in the league, too. The fact that the Thunder have this man under contract around the ballpark of $9.4 million per year over the next 4 to 5 years, with the way that he's continued to improve season after season, it might be the best value deal you'll find in the NBA right now. Now, I'm not going to guarantee you all that the Thunder will capture their first NBA championship as a franchise this season, but I'll go out on a limb and say that I do believe you're going to hear Aaron Wiggins' name quite a few times over the course of the playoffs, and for good reason. And should OKC be the first team to 16 wins in the playoff, the former Maryland product will play a big reason as to why, as much as SGA and J-Dub, alongside of Chet Holmgren, who you spoke of earlier, that stood out to you, Tony. And lastly, Quentin Grimes for the Philadelphia 76ers. He's bounced around to four teams in 4 years, 24 years old, out of Houston. We know the potential he has shown over the year to be a quality 3-and-D wing dating back to his first couple of seasons during his days with the New York Knicks. But now we're seeing him getting a chance to go to work as an on-ball creator right now as a member of the Philadelphia 76ers after getting traded over there at the deadline by the Dallas Mavericks. Grimes scored a career-high 44 points about a week ago against the Golden State Warriors to guide the Sixers to a win on ABC Saturday primetime. And he's almost averaging around 26 points per game to go alongside 5.2 rebounds and 5 assists per contest over his last 6 affairs, in addition to shooting 54% from the floor and 41% from three-point land in that same time span, as Grimes has accumulated more 30-point games for Philadelphia this year than Paul George after a 35-point outing against the Atlanta Hawks to open up the week. This was a guy who guided his alma mater in Houston to their first Final Four in 37 seasons just a few years ago. And while one could say that he could prove to be more consistent as far as his production goes, long term, he's finding success after a career high bump up in his usage rate with the Sixers right now. And not only is he putting up the best numbers of his career to date, but he's looking like the player for those who watched him back in the high school and collegiate ranks, made things happen off the dribble as a shot creator and playing with confidence in a manner akin to what I stated earlier with Josh Giddey. This really goes to show you how sometimes fit and opportunity within a given scheme matters, as I'm curious to see what Grimes' market will look like this offseason as an unrestricted free agent as well, based on what he's shown in the city of brotherly love. Let's segue from all of the opening pleasantries to discuss the team that continues to sit atop most of your favorite columnist power rankings, in addition to the Eastern Conference standings, as they recently clinched a playoff spot for the third consecutive season. For those who don't know who we're talking about, that's the Cleveland Cavaliers. They're currently riding a 14-game winning streak and getting set for action to face the Brooklyn Nets at the Rocket Arena out in Atlanta as we're recording right now, and have scored 110 points or more in every contest over their last 14 games that have all resulted in wins, as the 24-25 Cavs recently became the first team over the weekend to accomplish the feat since the 85-86 Boston Celtics, a team that went on to capture the Larry O'Brien Trophy that season under the late head coach Casey Jones. Cleveland enters the week boasting the best offensive rating in the NBA and ranks second in defensive rating following the All-Star break, as the recent acquisition of DeAndre Hunter from the Atlanta Hawks prior to the conclusion of the trade deadline, beside his running mate back in Virginia in Ty Jerome, has managed to supply the Cavs' second unit with a jolt as of late, beside what's already been one of the premier starting fives in the league this season, featuring an all-star backcourt in Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland, to go beside an all-star frontcourt duo of Evan Mobley and Jared Allen, who serve as the ministers of defense protecting the interior. Torrence, let some of the guys in the locker room, such as Donovan Mitchell, tell you the Cavs still have another level that they can take their game to when the postseason begins. Darius Garland has had his ups and downs shooting-wise following the festivities at All-Star, but Cleveland is still finding ways to win games in spite of his performance nonetheless. Cavs head coach Kenny Atkinson recently said that the reason why Cleveland boasts the best record in the league is a product of the depth that they have. Now, I won't ask you whether or not Cleveland is the team to beat in the East. However, when you look at this year's Cavs roster from top to bottom, do you believe that they boast the best depth out of any team across the NBA right now?
No, I don't believe they have the best. Certainly at the top, but I wouldn't go with the best, because to start off, you got to have the best players. I don't believe that they have the best players in their conference. Do they have some of the best players in their conference? Sure, but not at the top. Now, they have a strong unit when you speak of somebody like Max Strus. Yeah, he's a starter, but I look at the Cavs like you got the big four, so to speak, over there with Garland, Mitchell, Mobley, and Jared Allen. Really big three at this point, because even Allen, I won't say he's taking a step back, but we kind of see the pecking order really start to establish itself as Evan Mobley has continued to grow in consistency throughout the season. DeAndre Hunter, we spoke about, that was a big move for them because that allows Mobley to play more five. DeAndre can play either forward position and provide spacing on the court. Ty Jerome, somebody we recently spoke about, his ability to play either guard position definitely adds to it. You know, you still got guys like Dean Wade who can provide solid minutes as well, but I wouldn't put them at the very top. I think the Boston Celtics, the defending champs, I still think they have that honor as the team with the best depth in the league to me.
I understand the points that you make, and I believe that Boston is by far the deepest team in the league. But when reviewing Kenny Atkinson's quotes and reason as to why he believes that, I can understand it. And it's hard to argue against some of the points he makes. I mean, Cleveland's bench right now as a collective is averaging almost 40 points per game off the bench, which, as we're in the midst of recording this episode, it marks the third highest among the teams residing in the Eastern Conference. And I think Atkinson has done a fantastic job when it comes to not only streamlining the offense and ensuring that ball movement is always the focus in an effort to generate quality looks, but also when it comes to optimizing the rotation, even in spite of the uptick offensively, that they've still found a way to hold on to their defensive identity to support what's been the best offense in the NBA up until this point. Like, you take the big men that they have, and you talked about Torrance. And I think Pacers head coach Rick Carlisle said it best earlier this season following a matchup against them. How many teams have a big like Jared Allen who is not only excellent when it comes to altering shots around the lane, but crashes the glass and knows how to make solid reads as a passer out of the post or at the top of the key? You put his attributes beside Evan Mobley, who we know is one of the game's most versatile bigs, and as you have spoken about, has become more consistent as the season's gone along, can switch 1 through 5. Rebound, block shots in his own right, and also stretches the floor a little bit and scores. And it's sort of like an upgraded version of what we saw with the Lakers usher in with their two big setup during the 2019-20 season on the way to a championship down in the bubble, be it with JaVale McGee alongside of Anthony Davis or Dwight Howard. Cavaliers got one of the best offensive backcourts already in the league with Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland. I understand that they're not Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown, but you add shooters such as Max Strus beside what I just mentioned on top of acquiring DeAndre Hunter, who can also hold his own on the wing defensively to ensure there's no drop-off beside one of the two bigs when it's time for the second unit to go to work. And you understand why they don't miss much of a beat, and you can seek to rest Garland or Mitchell throughout various stretches of contest, especially when Ty Jerome has it going alongside his Virginia Cavalier running mate and best friend and Hunter. They really can play 11 or 12 deep on most nights, if not 13 deep, the way Atkinson described it recently. I wholeheartedly understand why he feels that way, although I don't know if he could get away with doing that come playoff time, because you need your top 8 or 9 guys in your playoff rotation. You can't afford to really be doing too much gambling in a best of 7 series. But we talk about the depth that this Cavs team possesses, as we know that it's played a significant factor as to why they've already secured a playoff spot and put themselves in position to ensure that the road to the finals out east goes through Cleveland as it pertains to possessing home court advantage. This is the third time this season that the Cavaliers have boasted a win streak of 10 games or more. We've seen some teams in the recent past put together some impressive runs in the month of March prior to the playoffs, only to falter later on in the postseason. One team that comes to mind, albeit they played a much different brand of basketball, is the 2017-18 Houston Rockets, the team that I covered, as you know, and was the last team prior to this year's Cavaliers squad to put together a trio of 10-plus game winning streaks within a single season, as they finished the year with a 65-17 record before falling to the Golden State Warriors in the Western Conference Finals in 7 games. We know that the race for who represents the West in the NBA Finals is wide open. But one might think that in the East, it's shaping up to be a two-team race between Boston and Cleveland when it comes down to who represents the conference come June. Do you believe that certain teams over the course of a given season can peak too early?
No, I don't believe in that theory. I think that's more of a media thing, honestly. Like, peaking too early is still kind of basically saying, oh, well, you know, this team was the best, but they played their best basketball too early. And that's like, that doesn't make sense. If you're the best team, you're the best team. You're going to get through those challenges, those obstacles. You have the resources as far as players and coaches to be the best team. Yeah, the teams catch win streaks and does it look good, but it all comes with context. The team might have had a 10-12 game winning streak during the season, but if you go back and look, that might have been the easiest part of their schedule. At the end of the day, you got to play four rounds of basketball to get to the NBA championship. And hopefully you don't run into a bad matchup, because you might have a better record statistically than a team, but they've been the pain in your ass the whole season. Of course, the most famous example with the Dallas Mavericks losing to the Warriors back in the day with Baron Davis and all. Mavericks had like 60-plus wins, but the Warriors were always a bad matchup for them. So I'm not going to bring up, oh, yeah, the Mavs, they just peaked too early. Like, no, they ran into the worst possible matchup for them.
Yeah, in the playoffs, it oftentimes always comes down to matchup. I don't care what seed you have. Only reason why I bring up that question is because it was a question that I heard Kevin Garnett ponder over about several years ago back on his Area 21 show when he was a member of the NBA on TNT broadcast, and I thought they had a very interesting discussion on it. I'm not so sure that teams over the course of a given season can peak too early. Like you said, you got to play the teams that are in front of you. And sometimes you're going to have parts of your schedule where it's hard as hell. Sometimes you're going to have parts of your schedule where you run into what somebody may deem to be a cupcake game or whatever here or there. And that ignites a winning streak. And before you know it, you've catapulted or elevated yourself atop of the standing. But you always want to be entering the playoffs playing your best brand of basketball. I don't care where you are in the standings. And if you're the Cleveland Cavaliers, who happen to be playing their best basketball right now, even though they say that they could go to another level, why wouldn't you want to continue to keep stockpiling wins on top of wins and ensuring that not only do you have home court in the East sold up, but that you sew up your division, which they're on pace to do, and not only sewing up your division, but gaining home court advantage in the NBA Finals in the event that you were to run into a team such as the Oklahoma City Thunder. I think when you have seasons like these, it's always going to be some peaks. It's always going to be some valleys. But when certain members of the media can't find them because you've been dominant throughout various stretches of the season, they start trying to nitpick and do various things to try and shit on it a little bit and say, well, how can you continue to be this dominant? And they wait for a certain point in time where you're going to fall off or you're going to get dispatched. And that time hasn't come for the Cleveland Cavaliers yet, but I think that a lot of people should seek to enjoy the current process that the Cavs are going through right now, trying to ascend in the East, and they are going to be the team with the most to prove this coming playoff.
Well, I'm not going to say that they're the team with the most to prove. If people want to watch the Cavs, they can watch them. If they don't, you will see them in May and June. I mean, I can understand somebody's perspective of they got something to prove, quote unquote, but I wouldn't necessarily go the most. Now, right now, the Cavs are having a great season, right? We know this as a franchise that went through a lot of trials and tribulations and a lot of struggles, especially pre-LeBron James. And then we got two LeBron James eras. Now, in the second era, we got four finals appearances, and we have a championship in 2016. And LeBron didn't win any MVPs during that time period. Now, that first era, from 03 to 2010, he won two MVPs, but he also had two 60-win seasons, 66 wins in the 08-09 year, which is the Cleveland Cavaliers franchise record. So I'm going to ask you, one, do you believe the Cavs this season will break that record? And two, do you believe this is the best non-LeBron James Cleveland Cavaliers team ever.
It's definitely the best non-LeBron James team that we've ever seen. 100%. No Cavaliers team has been better post-LeBron era or even pre-LeBron era than the 24-25 Cleveland Cavaliers. I enjoy watching them, the way that they move the ball, the way that Darius Garland is able to snake around the lane, Steve Nash like and find shooters, as well as Donovan Mitchell picking and choosing his spots and when and where to be aggressive. In regards to them breaking that record, as I pull up their schedule, I believe that they're putting themselves in a great position to do so.
Man, we know they're in a great position. Are they going to break the record or not?
I'm going to say it. The Cleveland Cavaliers are going to break that record. They're going to break that record. I got the schedule up in front of me. Like I said, they're facing off against Brooklyn later on this evening as we record this. And they got Memphis on the road this upcoming Friday. And they go home to face off against the Magic. Got the Clippers coming up, Kings, Suns, Jazz, Blazers on a road trip near the end of the month. When I'm looking at some of these games, yeah, I can see them breaking this record for damn sure.
And they smacked pretty much every team that they got to play left this season. They already beat them at some point during the season. So it's definitely looking like they'll get that 66. Now, funny enough, with that team, the 09 team, I believe that's the team that lost to the Orlando Magic in the postseason.
Yes, they lost to the Orlando Magic in 6 games. As we know, that was the first of LeBron's back-to-back MVPs. And Mo Williams was also an all-star on that team as well. So I remember very well the 08-09 Cavaliers run. But I will say it's been very fun to watch the success of the Cleveland Cavaliers from the outside looking in. And I'm really excited to see how they fare in the playoffs. And when I say they're the team with the most to prove, this is what I mean by that. The Cleveland Cavaliers, since the Donovan Mitchell era, have only gotten to the second round of the Eastern Conference semis thus far in their 3 years. Continue to build off that. You know, the first year, they lost to the Knicks in 5 games in the first round. Last year, they lost to the Celtics in 5 games in the semis. Continue to build off that and see where this thing can go. And that's what it's about, in my opinion, when you want to see the evolution of a team growing is one. But moving away from the organization that is yet to drop a contest since February 4th against the Boston Celtics to discuss a team the Cavaliers sent home a season ago in the first round and recently beat by 40 points in front of a nationally televised audience a couple of weeks ago and will square off against once again this upcoming Sunday afternoon at 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 p.m. Central Time on ABC in downtown Cleveland, and that's through Orlando Magic. The last time we discussed the state of affairs out in the theme park capital of the world, the Magic were figuring out ways to win games despite being without their two leading scorers, Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner, when they had to sit out for an extended period of time due to nursing torn obliques, as Orlando boasted a 17-9 record and set among the top four of the Eastern Conference standings as they looked to be a team that could potentially garner home court advantage in the opening round of the playoffs. Now, the franchise residing in the O finds themselves on hard times following the loss of guard Jalen Suggs for the rest of the year due to suffering a cartilage tear in his right knee shortly after the new year, and center Mo Wagner to a torn ACL just 4 days prior to Christmas. Going from sitting comfortably in the fourth seed on New Year's Day all the way to the eighth spot in the play-in portion of the current standing out east, as the Magic have dropped 7 out of their last 10 games since the All-Star break, with 5 out of those 7 losses being decided by 6 points or less, as Orlando recently managed to go 1-6 over the course of a 7-game homestand and have recently seen the league's 4 biggest drop-off in points scored per 100 possessions and rank among the bottom 10 when it comes to offensive efficiency for the 13th consecutive year. Torrance, we know that Orlando's calling card has been their defense over the last season and a half under head coach Jamal Mosley, as the Magic boast the second-best defensive rating in the NBA as of this recording, one spot currently above where they finished a season ago in that same category. The last time the Magic didn't finish among the bottom 10 in offensive rating, you have to go all the way back to the lockout-shortened 2011-12 campaign when their leading scorers were Dwight Howard, Ryan Anderson, and Jameer Nelson. They just recently held the Houston Rockets to under 100 points, albeit in a loss. I know there's still basketball games left to be played, But when you pinpoint what's led to Orlando's downward spiral in the wake of their recent injury, what must Magic president of basketball operations Jeff Weltman and general manager Anthony Parker do to help this franchise take that next step up in the Eastern Conference?
Obviously, everybody's been mentioning having a point guard would be the biggest upgrade that they could make. Yeah, they have Cole. They got Cole Anthony. We know they got Anthony Black as well. Jalen Suggs is somebody who plays better off the ball, but you got Franz Wagner and you got Paolo at the forward positions, similar to the Turkoglu, Rashard Lewis situation they had back in the day. But neither one are great shooters. The point guard is obvious, but do you need a superstar level one? Do you need an all-star level? Do you need to get creative and maybe try to go after a guy like Josh Giddey in restricted free agency? Just somebody that can make plays for others? I'm more curious for like Paolo and Franz Wagner. People spent a lot of years trying to break up Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Maybe this is something Orlando may need to look at. Do you need to move one of those guys to get what you really need? Because I think Paolo, if you get somebody that could create for him, I think he could go to another level on the floor. And we've always heard things about one day they would love to have him be the small ball five at some point. He's not quite there yet, but that's something that they're looking at. So it, whether it's point guard, shooting guard, wing, somebody that's a dominant perimeter player that could create, I think that's something that they could definitely benefit from. Yeah, Franz is that to a certain extent, but shit, he is kind of like Hedo Turkoglu. And Hedo Turkoglu, though he was very effective, I mean, I wouldn't call him one of the best players in the NBA. That team thrived because they did have a Dwight Howard, you know, more than anything. And that's another spot I think they could look to upgrade as well, is that five position.
I think acquiring a solid five on top of getting a solid two guard that can shoot the lights out would be very helpful for this group. I think that you can win with Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner together. I just think in order to maximize that pairing, you need to have a shot creator that also has the ability to score. And I believe that's going to help open up things for Franz Wagner and Paolo Banchero. Just some numbers for you. Franz Wagner is shooting 45.2% from the corners this year. In his career, he shot 40.2% from the corner. But over the course of his years in Orlando, he's steadily seen the corner three volume drop each year. The last time Paolo took a high amount of corner threes was his rookie year, when he happened to shoot 34% on them. You have a lot of people alongside of national columnists that are quick to say that Paolo and Franz are garbage three-point shooters and that they're not the most optimal pairing. However, we've seen in the past how there are many times when people are quick to assess or pinpoint flaws, but they don't think about the personnel that's around them. Paolo Banchero has such a green light in Orlando right now that he has the ability to just jack up a ton of ill-advised shots. I've seen firsthand watching a lot of their games, Jamal Mosley in his grill about some of that shit. Paolo, to his credit, is taking it on the chin, never ran from it or anything. And I think he's evolved and gotten better since coming back from the injury following the All-Star break. But they really need a guard that can create alongside of them. And I think it will open up so much alongside of Paolo and Franz. And if you get a big that can not only be ingrained in their defensive scheme, but can shoot the rock at a high clip, I think it can unlock even more. You talk about Jalen Suggs and how vital of a presence he was. Jalen Suggs is a guy that I think may be better suited playing off of the ball alongside of a high-octane point guard. Talk about the loss of Mo Wagner, right? Mo Wagner was their best three-point shooter this season. He shot 36% from beyond the arc. I believe he still leads the team in three-point shooting percentage in spite of not playing a game and over the last 3 to 4 months. So when you put all of that into perspective, I think that's really what it comes down to. You have to get a point guard. Now, can you get an all-star level point guard? No, you're not going to find that on the free agency market. But you may be able, or you may have to try and trade for a fringe level all-star. And this is the reason why I was so adamant about the Magic making a move for a guy that happens to be from the Orlando area, and that's Anfernee Simons of the Portland Trailblazers, a guy that I really think can help unlock a lot of things over there in Jamal Mosley's rotation if he ever got the opportunity to do so. But many experts, like I said, around the industry have pointed out how the acquisition of a point guard down the road could be just what is needed to not only help boost Orlando's offensive floor, but put Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner in better positions when it comes to getting quality shots from the floor. Do you believe that having a conductor to organize the flow in the direction of the Magic's offense is all that they need in order to truly get over the hump in the immediate future?
Define hump.
Okay. The Orlando Magic have not gotten past the first round since the 2010 NBA playoff.
First round for the Magic? I mean, shit, if they could have stayed healthy this season, they'd be in a better seeding position. Like right now, they looking at playing either the Cavs or the Celtics in the first round. Now, I know you was looking forward to them playing the Celtics in the postseason, but that sounded like a second round idea and not a first round one.
It was.
Because I think they could compete with Indiana, the Detroit, you know, teams of that, like, who are in the middle of the conference right now. With what they have now, if healthy, considering, yeah, they can get past the first round. But I'm looking at the overall talent level and the defensive play over there telling me that they should be a team that we talk about going to the Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, we know they're not going to get there, but we, you know, we got to talk like some teams can compete. So they should be in that atmosphere, but, you know, the injuries got them knocked back. I mean, we've gone over it 1,000 times. We definitely know they need the guard because Jalen Suggs, he's an off-ball player. He's like Josh Hart. Paolo, we know he's a mid to low post scorer. We know Franz, he's kind of like Josh Giddey. And, you know, they got some pieces, Wendell Carter. Hey, if you could put Miles Turner there, that'd be a great upgrade. You know what I'm saying? Just like small moves like that on the fringes. Like, I like the Anfernee Simons idea, but see, the problem with that is how much you're going to end up paying them when you could have took those same resources and a little bit more to go get something more significant. Like I said, Paolo just made the All-Star game last season, and, you know, he had an injury early, missed some games. So I'm sure no matter the results of this season, I expect him to come back next season to get back to that All-Star game at the very least. I look at between him and Franz, it's just clear who the guy is. So I'm looking at it, we not moving Paolo. Everybody else should be up for discussion. And I need my second guy to be near that same level of my first guy if this is my top guy and I'm trying to win a championship. So I think they need to be aggressive as far as getting this point guard, because you need that second piece. You need to at least have those top 2 to 3 guys on the team and then build the roster around that. You just got one right now. And they shouldn't, just because you gave Franz a contract doesn't mean that you need to just stand pat there in that spot.
Now, we know that this player I'm about to bring up would not be a long-term solution to fixing this problem, but he possibly could be a short-term solution. And he will hit the free agency market. And we don't know what the future holds for him, but we know that he's a future Hall of Famer that happens to be good friends with Bob Iger, and that's Chris Paul. Think that would be a destination for him?
Man, look, man, we can't just keep sending Chris around the league to be player development coach on the court. You know what I'm saying? Like, he did his thing on OKC. He did his thing in Phoenix. He did his thing as a young player with the Hornets. Nah, man. Look, I mean, of course it'll work, but damn, like, dude need to go and sit down somewhere. He got Wemby, bro. Like, he trying to get up to that assist rank, man. It ain't going to be no better assist option than having a 7'6" basketball player. So, nah, man, he need to just go on, stay where he at, and go home.
I just propose the idea, go, man. Don't shoot me
nah,
over.
Nah, let's get back to people that still got time left on the NBA clock.
Like, no, I feel you, but I just had to bring it up because it was a thought, and just looking at it, like, I understand he's at a point in his career where he is looked at, like you said, as the player development guy. He's a guy that's worked well beside young talent and young cores in recent memory and past. We know what he did for SGA and OKC, as you alluded to, and Dennis Schroeder. We see what he's doing for the young guard and De'Aaron Fox, Stephon Castle out in San Antonio, as well as what he did for Victor Wembanyama before he went down for the year after dealing with the blood clot in his shoulder. So I just brought it up, man, because it just was something that came to my mind.
Yeah, and I was always taught to keep your negative thoughts to yourself sometimes, man. That's just me and what I heard.
It's not a negative thought. I just was thinking about it. I'm not saying you got to do it, Tony. That's not what I'm saying.
Man, let that brother sit down somewhere.
Well, evidently he don't seem like he wants to. You know, he in year number 20, so he still collected checks.
We always the last to know, man. It's time to go sit down, brother.
Well, when it comes to the Magic, I do believe having a conductor to organize the flow will be helpful.
Trae Young would be a great option if Atlanta decides they actually gonna move on, but I don't see it.
Exactly. I don't see it. And that's what I was about to say. Like, initially, during the trade deadline, I kind of could. But just watching Atlanta recently, who's in the midst of a three-game win streak, I think Trae Young might have a spot there. And I think once they get a healthy Jalen Johnson back in the mix come next season, alongside of Zachary Richardson, who's actually playing some good basketball.
Been playing
some excellent basketball. Dyson Daniels. I really like what I'm seeing in Atlanta. And I think the moves they made at the trade deadline have actually bolstered and helped upgrade that bench. Caris LeVert's playing some solid basketball there. We know what Terrence Mann can do. Dating back to his days with the L.A. Clippers off the bench, serviceable defender. And they really improved on a lot of levels and look like a team that's going to be a tough out in the play-in.
Yeah, the play-in. Hey, you know what? I ain't going to lie. The play-in needs to be something that you want to have a fan vote. We need to have like a fan vote around this time of the year, because – this year, I was excited about the play-in at one point. But now, because of all of the injuries that's happened, I'm just like, look, man, we need to go old school this season. And the play-in shouldn't be an automatic thing every year this year. I know it sounds crazy, but this year, I'm like, look, man, if y'all ain't top eight, just forget about it. Hey, it ain't got different over the last few weeks, man. Like, that Kyrie injury really, that's what probably was like the final nail for me. I'm just like, yeah. Between them and a couple other teams, I mean, it'll be some cool extra basketball, I guess. But, like, do I really want to see the Heat and the Bulls?
I'll put it to you like this. I like the chaos.
It ain't no chaos for real.
Well, it ain't no chaos yet. Until it actually happens.
Y'all was about to say, if it's a couple upsets that happen, then maybe. Yeah.
I look forward to the play-in. I mean, hell, we've had some successful teams in recent memory come out of the play-in. I'm just saying. But pushing along from the home of Walt Disney World and talk pertaining to the Magic to discuss a 9-time All-Star who continues to etch his name among the game's all-time greats in the history book and add more to his arsenal on an annual basis, and that's Giannis Antetokounmpo of the Milwaukee Bucks. Just shortly following the release of episode 17 of the New 24 podcast, Antetokounmpo became only the 52nd man in NBA history to reach 20,000 career points as the two-time NBA MVP recipient through the Dallas Mavericks defense off by faking a dribble handoff to Damian Lillard at the top of the key and using his physical prowess and speed to drive to the cup and score easily on a left-hand layup in the third quarter to place his name in esteemed company, becoming the most recent man to reach the 20K mark since his teammate that he recently won an NBA Cup with, Damian Lillard, a season ago, and only the seventh player born outside the United States to join the club. In addition to scoring 20,000 career points this past week, Torrance, Giannis also surpassed former Phoenix Suns great Tom Chambers to move into 50th place on the NBA's all-time scoring list. He also said he has more to give and wants to join Kevin Durant as a member of the 30,000 point club soon following the accomplishment, a feat that if he were to reach would place him in an even higher ground among the game's greats, as only eight men currently reside in that club. Antetokounmpo is also on pace to average 30 points or more for the third straight year, as he's currently averaging nearly 31 points per game to go alongside 12 boards and 6 dimes while shooting almost 61% from the floor in his 12th season. Last week, I asked you whether or not fans have managed to take the Joker's nightly performances for granted. And it got me thinking a bit on Giannis, especially after seeing the latest remarks from Bucks head coach Doc Rivers, who said that Giannis is like a forgotten great player in the league, discussing how he hears everyone else's name but doesn't hear about the year that his most valuable stars happened. We know he's most certainly in the MVP convo, even if others in the national realm may not regard it the way that Doc would like for them to. But I want to ask, do you think being a multi-time MVP winner and showcasing a level of consistency season after season the way that Giannis has is leading the fans and media becoming fatigued by his level of dominance to the point where very few people just don't speak about it no more?
No, not at all. I don't think that really has much to do with it at all. I mean, it's Giannis. Giannis been around. Like, we know what he does.
I think when it comes to Giannis, he's actually improved over the last 3 years as a player. And I see some people highlighting that, paying respects to it. But I do find it kind of odd how several years ago, this was a player who you saw plastered everywhere. And then certain other stars started coming along, such as Nikola Jokic, Luka Doncic. And all of a sudden, Giannis got cast over to the side a little bit. Now, we can get into those reasons as to why a little bit later. And I know we will. I'm not going to use this platform right now to do that. But I do find that rather fascinating or curious is that how a guy that won back-to-back MVP just got shoved to the side like that. Now, I've seen that happen to other players when it comes to them getting rewards or awards. Michael Jordan late in his career, even LeBron, but not even those two got casted aside like Giannis did. And I understand they have bigger profile, much bigger profile. Giannis, I think, definitely has been the forgotten great in the game today. I'm not saying that to try and ruffle feathers, but I do believe that Doc, even though he may be a bit biased, he brought up some good points when he made that assessment.
Look, the elephant of the room is Giannis not getting this so-called attention that y'all feel like he deserves because he in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. All right? That's all it come down to. They won a title in 2021. They played against the Phoenix Suns. Basketball-wise, it was a great finals. Outside in the world talking to people, outside of being true basketball fans, nobody cared about them finals. And we know location and team prestige got a lot to do with it. On top of the fact, the team being in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, they're not performing great. The year they won the title and the years previous to that, great. Top of the conference, playing great. Last couple of years, Middleton, he's been hurt. He's been traded. The Damian Lillard saga, first year, not great. Second year, we seeing some improvement. Adrian Griffin, head coach. And out of nowhere, team consultant Doc Rivers takes over mid-season. And in between all of this shit, we got Giannis, unprompted, just making crazy quotes about, hey, man, I know it's a business. The team may look to improve. I could be traded as it like anyone else. That was before Luka got traded. You hear people saying, hey, Jimmy, he's on Golden State. Look at that to be a potential trade during the summer if the Warriors don't get to the finals. Because, you know, there's been rumor that the top of the Golden State Warriors wish list is Giannis. Same with the Miami Heat. And we got him out here just throwing himself into trade rumors. So, really, you take somebody like me, I'm just waiting to see where he goes next. Because clearly he don't want to be there for real. So, it's like, I know Giannis is great. He's going to always play at an MVP level as long as he's healthy and his athleticism doesn't decline, which he's made those adjustments to his game you spoke about earlier, becoming more consistent from the outside with his jump shot, getting to his spots easier. But I'm just waiting on him to leave for real, bro. I ain't even gonna lie. Like, that's why I'm just like sitting here like, bro, it's not that nobody's paying attention. It's just like, bro, we just waiting on him to be somewhere excited because he clearly not excited about it. Like, the Damian Lillard thing flamed out immediately.
So it's the Milwaukee connection for you. That's why you think he's kind of faded, and combined with the fact, like you said, and bro, when I say faded, I'm not talking about his game. I'm not talking about his game yet.
Nah, he sound like he tired of being in Milwaukee too. Like, I mean, shit. I mean, hey, Milwaukee decent, bro. I ain't even just saying it like it's a bad place. I'm just saying,
I know.
Is you 90 minutes from the greatest city in the world. So it's like,
and his agency is here, by the way, for those who don't know where we're recording from.
And look, and
his agency is here.
Yana said he loves Chicago too. Now,
no, I know he does.
No, I mean, that would be funny. Like, damn, bro, you gonna like go in within your own division? I mean, that's hilarious. But hey, man, you know, we got a lot of his people here, man. Shout out to the Nigerians, man. And we got some like nice Greek restaurants. So, hey, Giannis, you know, you ever want to come down to the 312-773-708? You know what I'm saying? Pick your side of town, bro. You know how I love us.
I see you doing some master recruit there, Torrance. But although I'm sure that most fans, including his detractors, will admit that watching Giannis Antetokounmpo with a full head of steam and an open floor is a special sight to behold, there are some folks out there who will be quick to state, and I'll admit I was one of them once upon a time, that criticized him for his lack of a reliable jumper. Some we know that opponents sought to exploit in the past, building a wall to neutralize him in the paint, and did successfully, such as the Toronto Raptors in the 2019 Conference Finals. Yet in the grand scheme of things, Giannis is still a force to be reckoned with, developed the familiarity, getting to those spots as you alluded to, particularly at the elbow area of the floor, finding great success. He's converting on the mid-range jumpers from 15 to 19 feet that defenders grant him when cutting off the driving lanes, and he's currently shooting almost 48% on those shots from the exact distance that I just mentioned. Antetokounmpo is only taking 4% of his shots from beyond the arc this year. We just recently heard Steph Curry praise his game and call him a unicorn, saying that his greatest skill is his ability to see space, take up space, get to wherever he wants on the floor, and that he doesn't have to change anything about his game because he's the best in the world at it. Giannis has even said that he liked to take more threes, but that doing so was not conducive to the overall success of his team. There was a time when many were quick to state that Giannis doesn't have a bag in a fashion similar to LeBron, like you mentioned Torrance in episode 17 when we talked on the King. You very rarely hear that now in regards to Giannis, but in an era where the three-point shot is so in vogue, while so many fans complain about that, some fail to acknowledge his improvement within this particular area that's helped him to find success as he enters into his 30s. Do you believe that Giannis's style of play is what's led to the recent comments that we heard from Doc Rivers as far as it pertains to him being the forgotten great? I know you brought up the fact that he plays in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and being in that small market is just something that everybody's not able to gravitate to.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not changing my answer. Like, that's what it is. I'm not changing my answer on that, bro. We don't care about, oh, how Giannis play. Like, bro, Giannis be trying to dunk on people. Giannis play a physical style. Giannis play hard. You know what I'm saying? Giannis, he tries to make big plays on defense. Like, man, shit, me and you done been to Bucks games. Like, bro, worth the price of admission. So, no, it ain't got nothing to do with none of that. I know you a James Harden fan. You know what I'm saying? You got your skilled disciples out here and shit like that. But, hey, man, sometimes it's cool to see somebody get dunked on. Like, that's the era I came up in. So, nah, play style ain't got nothing to do with the Nigerian great being the forgotten great. Bro be killing. We just waiting on him to go to his next destination. Or is it going to be Chicago, Miami? Shit, will the Knicks just pack it all up and bring him in? Golden State. The Clippers, the Mavs. Hey, it's going to get real interesting up there. That's all I'll say.
I will say this before we move on, and this is not me shitting on Milwaukee. Never went to Milwaukee a day in my life until I saw Giannis highlight and I saw the prices of admission on tickets. And I did a side-by-side comparison between the tickets for Bucks games price-wise compared to Bulls games. And I was like, oh, they happen to have one of the best players in the league. I'm going to go
nice
up
arena
there and make the track. And, yeah, and you know what? I've enjoyed being able to watch Giannis at the Fiserv Forum off and on over the last several years. I'm not saying where he's going to go. I definitely could see the Knicks trying to get in on the Giannis sweepstakes whenever that does happen. I don't believe he'll end up playing his entire career in a Milwaukee Bucks uniform. But while he's still a member of the Milwaukee Bucks, I have to salute what he's been able to do there. And I know he'll always be remembered by the fan base there and a legend for the franchise as he happened to deliver their first championship in a half a century.
Hey, look, man, if he leave, that's better for me because them tickets going to go down and I can still see the other players that I want to see play. I mean, it is great because I know with Giannis there, the game is guaranteed to be competitive and so forth. And they got nice restaurants too. So, and a special brand of lady up there too. It's not all the way bad. Giannis want to leave. That's the point I'm really like making. Giannis wants to leave. And he got Doc Rivers as his coach. So, like, we know they're not winning the titles, and he wants to win the title. So those two ideas have finally collided with each other. So we are all playing a waiting game.
Great gambling establishments, too, of Milwaukee. If you don't know, go to Pottawatomie. You might find some luck there. But carrying on from the chatter surrounding Giannis Antetokounmpo's game into a special segment we're going to introduce this week on the new 24 podcast known as Pass or Shoot. A moment in the show where we'll take time to uncover three specific statements and determine whether or not we'll pass, which indicates why we're not buying the following statement, or shoot, and share exactly why we believe the following statement to be indeed true. We'll start off this segment with a statement on a team that's currently in the midst of a three-game win streak as it is recording in the West, and that's the Memphis Grizzlies. Currently sit a game above Houston for the fourth seed in the conference with a 41-24 record. Despite their all-star forward, Jaren Jackson Jr., being out of action due to nursing a sprained right ankle for the last week, want to know if you're going to pass or shoot on this statement as it pertains to Memphis. The Memphis Grizzlies should be viewed as a legitimate contender if they manage to enter the playoffs fully healthy and finish the regular season, having earned a top three seed in the Western Conference.
No, man, look, we're not going to play the pretend game like I spoke about earlier with the Magic where, you know, like I said, we got these teams that are really good. They got some young players that we like, and they can get to the second round, but we know they're not going nowhere past that. And if they get to the conference finals, the team that's supposed to be in the finals is going to handle them and get there, and we're going to all move on accordingly, you know, and that's where they sit right now. Do they have great talent? Do they have great depth? Yes, they do. Ja Morant has been up and down as far as health this season. And that's the engine right there. Shit, that's the car. Ja hasn't quite played up to that level that we accustomed to seeing. Now, they do have more balance in some ways. You know, Desmond Bane is still there. We've seen Jaren Jackson's game evolve statistically this season. We got Zach Edey there, you know, coming off the bench sometimes starting. G.G. Jackson, he's back after dealing with an injury. I mean, they got talent, but we already got OKC at the top. We already got the Denver Nuggets at the top. We got LeBron and Luka on the Lakers together. They're somewhere between legit contender and team we got to talk about like that because they have LeBron and Luka. Nah, I can't just be throwing Memphis in there because then at that point, then I got to start throwing teams who I know don't have a chance like Golden State in there. Yeah, shout out to y'all. Nah, I never miss opportunity.
I'll say this when it comes to Memphis. I know basically all in all, you said that you're going to pass. I'm going to pass on this. I don't think you can view them as a legitimate contender just because they may get a top three seed in the Western Conference. Like me and Torrence alluded to when talking about the Cavaliers, it always comes down to matchup. And I think that's going to be a very important thing when it comes to Memphis's journey in the Western Conference playoff. Ja Morant, I think he's played well in stretches. However, you can tell that the reins have been rather tight on him with Taylor Jenkins. If many periods in time will take Ja out of game in the midst of having like a nice quarter to get Scottie Pippen Jr. in his second unit in the mix and stuff like that. And sometimes you don't really see him catch that same rhythm once he takes him out after being in a rhythm. So I'm not so necessarily on the Memphis Grizzlies being a legitimate contender. And I think we're going to find out exactly who Taylor Jenkins is in this playoff. I think he's done a good job his first several years, but I think he's made some questionable decisions when it comes to rotation as of late that have cost him in some game. And I also believe that if he does that in the playoff, it could lead to an early exit. And it's something that he has to seek to address alongside of his coaching staff. Because at some point, you're going to have to let what Torrence described as your engine and Ja Morant do all that he can to guide you to the promised land alongside of Jaren Jackson Jr. And if you're not going to do that in those depth pieces don't show up and show out, it's going to be a tough road for you. Although I will say, I like the young rookie Cam Spencer out of UConn. Had a big game the other night against the Phoenix Suns. Was hitting some big-time triples to give that bench a spark. Was talking some shit to Kevin Durant. Made it a very interesting game out there on Beale Street. All right, let's get into team number two on pass or shoot. The New York Knicks. They still sit with a 4.5 game lead over the Bucks for the third seed, the East, despite having been without their all-star guard, Jalen Brunson, for the last few games and will be without him for the next couple of weeks after spraining his ankle late in an overtime loss to the Lakers last week in Los Angeles. Knicks head coach Tom Thibodeau said he's unsure if Brunson will be able to return prior to the conclusion of the regular season in 5 weeks. New York is currently in the midst of a 5-game road trip out on the West Coast with a pair of outings left this week between Portland and Golden State over the weekend. The statement for the Knicks is as follows. The New York Knicks will fail to make it past the first round of this year's NBA playoff. You passing or you shooting?
I'm shooting. Yeah, I'm shooting right from the hip with this one for sure. Look, it might not be likely, but guess what? On the other side of that, it's just as likely to happen. You got Jalen Brunson already out with an injury, right? Injuries happen. But we already know in the back of your mind, you like, this is the Tom Thibodeau effect. Josh Hart out there playing 45 minutes a night. Like, at some point, you just never know. OG Anunoby, we know his injury history. Cat not always the most durable, but he's been doing his thing this year. Mikal Bridges, the only body we know going to hold up. And when you look at the teams below them, I give the Bucks a chance to beat them in the postseason. Any round? Did Indiana beat them last year, right?
Yes, they did. Yeah, Seven games in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I ain't like that shit. I kind of was. I wanted the Knicks to win. I ain't gonna lie. That's why I really did put that out the back of my mind. Nah, because Halliburton did that shit. You gonna wear the hoodie talking shit after the game?
I know what you're talking about.
That's what I'm saying, bro. See, I ain't gonna lie, bro. A good heel. I ain't gonna lie, because Halliburton, he low key be kind of pissing people off. And then right now, as it currently stands, they'll be playing the Detroit Pistons in the first round. And that's what I'm shooting with, man. I think Detroit can beat them in the first round healthy, too. And I think Kay Cunningham looking forward to that matchup. I know Isaiah Stewart, he definitely looking forward to running in the cap for 7 games. I ain't going to lie, bro. We highlight ready with that one. We highlight ready with that one, man. That's that Jamaican on Dominican beef, too, right there. I'm sorry for all the race reference. I've been watching a lot of boxing lately. I see the Knicks going out in that first round.
You know what? I'm shooting from well beyond the arc on this. I could definitely see it. It's just something about those New York Knicks, man. It don't matter what seed they are. It don't matter what record they finish with, whether they got home court advantage in the series or not. Every time a young star makes his playoff debut in Madison Square Garden, 9 times out of 10, we get a spectacular showing. If the Detroit Pistons manage to stay in that 6th seed and they take on the New York Knicks in that 3 seed, I think we're going to have a thrilling series, but I would definitely not be surprised if the Detroit Pistons
are you win picking them or
the
not?
First round. I wouldn't. Am I going to pick the Pistons?
Are you picking them all right as of today?
Hell yeah.
Okay, thank you.
I can say that. I mean, I don't mind. I don't.
If you're gonna shoot,
making
shoot.
Predictions.
If you're gonna
I am. I said I'm shooting for Belltown, Devin. Yeah. I am. I think that the New York Knicks have a great chance of getting dispatched in round one, even if the Pacers were to fall into the 6th spot, a team that we know they have a long-standing rivalry with, but as of recent times, the Pacers have gotten the upper hand. And I understand what you would talk about with Tyrese Halliburton. I don't know what it is, but we got to find a way to get Tim Hardaway Sr. On the court again, because he seemed determined and hell-bent to want to play Tyrese Halliburton one-on-one. And I need to know what was said.
No, I'm cool. I don't need to know.
I feel like I need to know, because I've never seen an OG just directly headhunt and act a player like this and say, hey, you ain't who you say you are.
Hey, sometimes things are done in metaphors. You know, you heard one-on-one basketball, and it just sounded like he was offering him to show up at any location one-on-one.
It definitely sounds like that. And last but not least, a team we haven't discussed too much really since the opening episode of the new 24 podcast and the Phoenix Suns. who currently find themselves on the outside looking in of the Western Conference play-in race at 11th overall and 2.5 games back of the Dallas Mavs for the 10th and final spot. Currently 5 games under 500 with a 30-35 record, Phoenix currently sports an 18-13 record against teams at home this season as of this recording. However, the road has proven to be their kryptonite as the Suns have posted a 12-22 record when playing on enemy lines away from the desert. The franchise by the Valley also enters the home stretch of the regular season with one of the league's toughest remaining schedules as the Suns will play 14 out of their final 17 games against teams currently over 500. The final statement on this week's Pass or Shoot segment regarding the Suns tour. Despite the tumultuous offseason that lies ahead for Suns owner Matt Ishbia and his front office, Phoenix does just enough to squeak into the play-in tournament out west by the conclusion of the regular season.
I'm going to say yeah, but it's pushing it because right now the Kings and the Mavericks got a 2.5 game lead over them. It's like you pretty much praying on Dallas's downfall because now there's no AD, there's no Kyrie. I think Dallas, I just think they might just do just enough to keep that 10th seed. At times during the year, it just seems like the Phoenix Suns, especially the last few months, they just ready for the season to end. That's the biggest indication I get from them.
I don't know, man. Sometimes I watch Phoenix play, and it's like, of course, the obvious talent, and I never want to disrespect Kevin Durant. He one of the all games, all-time greats, top 10 player ever to me. I don't know if it's Bud not a good fit over there, the Bradley Beal situation. Of course, you know, the media going to always blame KD and those who already don't like Kevin Durant. When I see KD over there, I see him encouraging the young guys, still performing at a high level, even when he's not touching the ball multiple possessions for some odd reason. Unless they can just catch a hot streak, I'm going to have to pass.
I'm with you on that. I'm no look passing on this one. I know they got a lot of talent. I know that they're coming off of one of their best weeks since the beginning of February. They beat a good team in the Clippers, took the Nuggets to overtime in Denver, took care of business against the shorthanded Mavs squad, their best three-game stretch on offense. But they had 6 guys average a double figures over the last 3 games. 2 of those were centers Nick Richards and Mason Plumlee, who combined to average 31 points combined on 76% shooting. I think their defense is going to be what costs them. It's just not there. And they've had a catastrophic drop-off in that regard. When you combine that with the up-and-down play offensively, even in spite of Kevin Durant's greatness and even Devin Booker, I just think that's going to be too hard to overcome down there in the Valley, man. And I don't see Jason Kidd's bunch in Dallas just being so quick to give up that 10th and final spot. Like you say, guys out there competing. And you got guys out there that's fighting for jobs, too, such as Akai Jones. They signed him off the street, and as soon as he came to play and they put him in a uniform, he put up a double-double. I just can't see them getting into that playing spot or that final 10th seed to make it and cause some chaos out in the West. I can't see it. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you know, but the NBA has some big-time matchups on the bill for you guys this week that's looking to find some action in the days leading up to March Madness. Starting with a showdown on Wednesday night between two franchises who shortly after their previous meeting with one another, we discussed back in episode 9 here on the New 24 podcast, and could possibly face off just a few months from now in the NBA final. Is the man you heard us discussing last week, the MVP frontrunner, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who looked to guide the Oklahoma City Thunder into a primetime matchup after drawing the last laugh in their opening matchup this year against Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and the Boston Celtics, at the TD Garden at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 p.m. Central Time on ESPN, followed by a rematch between a pair of teams that duked it out in an epic 7-game series during the Western Conference semis a season ago, as Anthony Edwards and the Minnesota Timberwolves will square off against Nikola Jokic and the Denver Nuggets out in the Mile High City for the nightcap contest, in addition to another all-star showdown between a pair of players that have been named to the All-NBA first team for over the last 5 years and counting over on TNT this upcoming Thursday evening, where you can catch number 77, known as Luka Doncic, directing the show for the Los Angeles Lakers, facing off against the man that you just heard us discussing earlier in this episode, who recently became a member of the 20,000 point club, and Giannis Antetokounmpo, Damian Lillard, and the Milwaukee Bucks at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 p.m. Central Time, followed by the Battle of Northern California between the Sacramento Kings and Golden State Warriors out at the Chase Center. And should you not be able to check out the Dubs in that late night affair by the Bay, well, you can catch them in an interconference affair a couple of days later with Carl Anthony Towns and the New York Knicks rolling to downtown San Francisco to face the newest member of the 25,000 point club and Stephen Curry at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Central Time on ABC Saturday primetime. Fans can also check out Paolo Banchero and the Magic squaring off against Evan Mobley and the Cavs on Sunday afternoon across ABC, in addition to Thunder Bucks out in Milwaukee later on that same day in the evening on ESPN. I know we're only a few days away from most of our stateside listeners being tuned into Selection Sunday and filling out their March Madness bracket. But for those not paying that any mind and focused solely on the NBA tournament, which game should they have their eyes on in week 21?
Lakers, Denver Friday, no LeBron. Still a matchup to look forward to. That's still Luka against Jokic. Friday as well, Cleveland and Memphis. Got to see if the Cavs can continue their winning streak. This would be one of the few tests that they have left during this stretch. And as we spoke about earlier, can they break that 66-win franchise record? And Saturday, Detroit and OKC. And then Monday, the Denver Nuggets and the Golden State Warriors. I've been talking a lot of shit about the Warriors. I'm going to continue to talk shit about the Warriors. But I will say that depending on how this game goes Monday, and considering if the teams are somewhere near full strength, I may change my opinion about the Warriors. But until then, fuck them.
I got two games for you guys over the weekend that you all should have your eyes on. Starting with the battle out of Memphis between the Cleveland Cavaliers, team that we just discussed at the opening portion of this show, going up against the Memphis Grizzlies, who you heard us discussing in the Pass Your Shoe segment. Last time these two teams met, it was a few weeks ago. The Cavs managed to come out on top at home in their opening matchup of the year. It's Ty Jerome shot making late on the way to scoring 26 points off the bench proved to be the difference beside Donovan Mitchell's 33-point evening alongside Evan Mobley's double-double night in the nationally televised bout near the close of last month. Jaren Jackson Jr. and Ja Morant also managed to combine for 43 points and 14 assists for the Grizzlies in that matchup as well. However, Jaren Jackson Jr.'s status for that game is up in the air. As we mentioned how he's been nursing a sprained ankle toward the home stretch of the show, Desmond Bain struggled in the opening game between the two teams this season, mustering only 7 points on a rough 2-for-13 night from the floor for Memphis. Can Desmond Bain find a way to make a difference and be that second option we know him to be against one of the league's top defenses in front of the home fans at FedEx Forum, who we all know will be amped up for that one? They're going to need him, especially with the Grizzlies being in a fight to garner a top three seed in the West. Shall be a fun one. And let's not forget, Saturday night, Thunder at Pistons, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central on NBA League Pass. You've heard us discussing Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Cade Cunningham all season long, most notably in our most recent episode of the New 24 podcast back in episode 17. Now, you can see them go toe-to-toe against one another, not to mention a battle between a pair of young bigs who were once stars at the prep level prior to facing off against one another during their collegiate days in the second round of the NCAA tournament a couple years ago, with Thunder center Chet Holmgren, who once starred at Gonzaga, and Pistons center and Memphis alum Jalen Duren, two players who happen to be lottery picks in the 2022 draft class, as Duren currently leads the NBA in double-doubles by a player under the age of 25 since the beginning of last season and has been playing some incredible basketball, averaging 14 points and 11 boards, while also shooting 71% from the floor over his last 10 games for Detroit as of this recording. You'll get a chance to see the team with the best defensive rating in the league in Oklahoma City going up against a Detroit squad that has the fourth best defensive rating in the NBA following the All-Star break. Might be a matchup you don't want to miss if you want to see young talent and good hoops out in the Motor City, as it's definitely a game I wish I could get to this weekend, because if I could, I'd do it. Well, that's a wrap on this week's edition of the New 24 podcast. If you've enjoyed what you've heard throughout the course of the first 18 episodes, in addition to this one, then please take out the time to leave us a 5-star rating and provide us with your own commentary and thoughts in regards to what you think about the podcast across the platforms you use to fully consume the shows that you love, as we appreciate all of your feedback and support. You can also follow the official social media platform for the New 24 podcast as well, that are officially up and running across both Twitter, now known as X, and Instagram right now at TNTF_, to ensure that you don't miss out on any episodes to release from the time that it drops, and stay up to date on all the things that you need to as it pertains to future show announcements and so forth in the NBA during the days myself and Torrance are not behind the microphone recording our episodes. Plus, you can also take a brief moment of your time to subscribe to the official RSS feed for the New 24 podcast if you haven't done so already, and find that at rss.com/podcast/TNTF. Once again, for myself, Gabriel Wilkins, and my co-host, Torrance Stagger, we hope that you stay safe out here and have a joyful and productive week. And as always,